Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Hey guys, Greg here. Last year at 49, I made the decision along with my physician and my family to go on TRT. I was lacking energy compared to where I used to be. I was not recovering the way I used to, wanted to, and needed to in order to maintain the lifestyle I live. I was also stressed, anxiety-ridden, and frustrated. And it wasn't about my lifts in the gym or aesthetically the way I looked or even about sexual performance. It really was all about energy. Energy to do the things that I want to do when I want to do them, with who I want to do them with, for as long as I want to do them the way that I want to do them. It's about waking up with energy and going to bed tired, the good kind. And I had lost a lot of that. And I had carefully been tracking my progress throughout the past couple of years. And after researching various options, providers, and services available, I went with Hone Health. And I started to feel like myself again. It's about being the best husband, father, and provider I can be for as long as I can be. And I simply wanted to have my energy, acuity, focus, smile, and health back to where it was and where I expect it to be. I believe in what Hone is doing every day, what they've done for me, and what they can do for other midlife males to help them live better, stronger, healthier, and happier lives. If you're interested in learning more about Hone Health, go to honehealth.com/midlifemail to order your at-home test and consultation and save $15. All right, here we go, guys. Greg Scheinman with you. It is another week, another episode of the Midlife Male Podcast, where we delve into the multifaceted challenges of navigating midlife and ultimately maximizing it so that we can stop seeing aging as something to fear and start seeing it as something aspirational. Today, my esteemed guest is Coach Frank Rich. Coach Frank is the founder of Rebuilt Recovery and is a highly regarded expert specializing in the sensitive and important topic of porn addiction. He has dedicated his life to helping individuals overcome the grip of addiction and reclaim their sense of self to take back control of their mind and body. He is recognized for his compassionate yet no BS approach and a deep understanding of the complexities surrounding addiction. Coach Frank has transformed the lives of countless men who have grappled with the challenges of pornography addiction. And through his guidance, support, and evidence-based strategies, he empowers his clients to break free from the destructive patterns and cultivate healthier relationships with themselves and their loved ones. With a breadth of knowledge, a wealth of knowledge, and a genuine commitment to his clients' well-being, Coach Frank brings a unique blend of empathy, expertise, and practical guidance to the realm of addiction recovery. And it's these insights and strategies that shed light on the psychological, emotional, and social factors that contribute to porn addiction, offering a path towards healing and personal growth. So throughout this episode, Frank and I explore the complexities of midlife, addiction, and personal transformation, and we dive deep into the challenges that men face in navigating this particular addiction in the context of their midlife journeys. Frank shares his wisdom, strategies, and practical advice to help us understand the root causes of porn addiction and offer insights into how we can support ourselves and others on the path to recovery and personal fulfillment. So listen up, join us as we embark on this candid and enlightening conversation with Coach Frank Rich, and we're going to explore the powerful journey of overcoming porn addiction and finding renewed purpose in midlife. Here we go. Frank, welcome. It's been a minute since we tried to get this going.
Yeah, brother. No, we were joking about it, man. We had to jump through a couple of hoops, and you know, running a podcast now for me the last 3.5 years, I've always found the ones that are like difficult to link up. Like you got to go through a rescheduling or there's like a tech issue. Like these always turn into the most epic conversations. So I'm no doubt believing like today we're just going to crush something. There's going to be tremendous value for all the listeners and hopefully some takeaways for you and I as well.
But, no, appreciate honored to be here. I totally agree with that. I want to hang there even for a second. You know, I think people think that success, you know, like success, you know, or getting people either booked on podcasts or anything like in a way should be, you know, like easy. Like how many episodes have you done of your show?
We'll be releasing 169 tomorrow.
Okay. 169 episodes of the Superhuman Life podcast. You guys have to check that out. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to that. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting in here is, like, out of 169 episodes, what do you think the ratio? You've got a successful background. How many asks? Okay, yeses and nos to get guests that are on there. This rescheduling, this commitment to consistency. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Oh, that's a great question. You know, and it's something that I probably don't try hard enough with people that I maybe feel are outside of kind of my range, right? You know, I think coming out, like, I don't know how you started your podcast, but for me, it was like, let me tap into my friend circle. Like, who do I have that's a friend that's got an interesting story or has an area of expertise? Like, it's easy. Hey, man, I want to do a podcast with you. Shoot him a text. He comes over the house. We'll kind of record it in person. That was like the first layers, right? It's like your inner circle. Then you kind of step into like, okay, now you get kind of like the beginner podcast. You'll maybe do a swap. Like, hey, I'll interview you. You interview me. It was about 30 episodes in that I was like, I really want to have this guy. Let me go to his website. Let me fill out the contact form and see where that goes. And truthfully, Greg, I've only had maybe 5 of those attempts that didn't come back with a yes. Every once in a while, you'll get a ghost. Maybe in 20 reach outs, I've had like 2 people not respond at all. I've had a handful of people say, hey, you know what, Frank, we like what you're all about. We like your idea here. Now is not the right time. Follow back up with us. And I would follow back up and they would honor their word. But truthfully, and this is what I tell a lot of like up and coming entrepreneurs, is you got to get past the fear of just asking. Because at the end of the day, if somebody says no, I'm in the exact same position I am today. But if they say yes, now I have an opportunity to connect. I have an opportunity for an incredible conversation, value for our audience, and then a relationship that no telling where that could lead to. So I haven't had a lot of people that I've actually reached out to that have said no.
Mm-hmm. I think that's super valid. And even the ones that might be either a no or a not yet,
yes.
You know, what's super, sometimes, and I tell guys this too, they just want to see how committed you are to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're going to stay in the game. You know, everyone's time is valuable. Your priorities are not necessarily their priorities, you know, and yes. Vice versa. Yeah. Right now, I know why you want Frank on the show. You know, I know mm-hmm. why you want. Okay. But let me see if you're going to be here. That's 169 episodes worth of credibility also that you have now. Yep. History, track record, consistency, preparation, accountability. Sometimes mm-hmm. these bigger gets, if you will, you know, they'll yep. be like, they just want to know, like, hey, you're for real. You've been around for a while. You yeah. don't want to be in the first 2 episodes or 3, like not as big of an accomplishment. No offense. So like, hey, you did 1 episode or 2 episodes and you think we should just kind of roll on. Let me see what you got. How yeah. often are you going to hit me back up again? Are you willing to wait a year? You know, 52
exactly.
more episodes to get me on your show. That's interesting. That's yeah. entrepreneurship.
And as the podcaster, to try to get the biggest names in the first 5, 10, 20 episodes, like you're kind of doing a discredit to yourself because you're developing your voice, you're figuring out your style of asking questions, like your reach, unless you've already got a massive audience socially somewhere else, your reach is going to be very, very small. It's interesting you use that example because one of our first big guests was episode 58 or 60. He was somewhere right in the 58 to 60. And it was Steve Weatherford, NFL Super Bowl mm-hmm. champion,
yeah.
punter for the Giants, fittest man in the NFL. I had a relationship with Steve personally. We got connected at an event years ago, 2016, right when he was kind of making his way into the entrepreneur kind of influencer space. So we had done some things like in the fitness space together. So I had an in with Steve, like personally. So, you know, right when I launched back in 2019, Steve was on my dream list of 100. Like, I definitely want to get Steve on. I'm like, let me just shoot him a message. Let me see where he's kind of at with this. I was about 5 or 6 episodes in, and he told me that exact thing. He said, Frank, you know what, man? Like, I want to support you in everything that you're doing. You understand the amount of demand that I get for my time, though? He's like, prove to me that you're committed to this. Get 50 episodes in the bank. He's like, and then I will come on your show. And that's exactly what I did. I put the nose down 50 weeks, recorded the episodes. The minute that 50th episode aired, I shot at Steve. I said, here you go, brother. We followed up. We did exactly what we said we're going to do. Let's get you booked. And then, like I said, he honored his word, you know, and he showed up, and he was episode 58, I believe, is what he was.
So, such a good story and so true. And I think such a good lesson, like, out there for all of it. Like, hey, and it feels better. Mm-hmm. One, better for you. Better for him, better for the audience, better all the way around, man. Yeah. It's that earn not given thing. It's that value again of commitment in your word and time and going to do it. And I'm sure it's a better episode, you know, for all of those reasons. So really, really cool stuff and a great way to open up. While you were talking, you said something, I made a note of it. You said, hey, Frank, we like what you're all about. You know, I think that was said to you. We like what you're all about. And to kind of take this back to the beginning and for guys out there and for the audience that are maybe not as familiar as they should be, and they will be by the time we're finished with this and they're signing on to everything you're doing, what are you all about?
That's a great question, Greg. At a 30,000 foot view, I would say everything that I do, from running the podcast to our company, our coaching, all the content, all the messaging, is about equipping men with the tools they need to become better men. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about the podcast, The Superman Life. You know, we're dedicated to helping men level up in the 5 key areas of life: their faith, fitness, finance, family, and freedom, so they can step into life that God created for them to live. Our company, Rebuild Recovery, which is, you know, our main revenue driver. The podcast is passion. You know, we just love the content. We love the conversations and just kind of putting the free stuff out in the world. You know, I make a living coaching men through Rebuild Recovery. Our mission statement with Rebuild Recovery is to help men become better men by quitting porn first and then rebuilding their lives. And that rebuilding of the lives, you know, we touch on those 5 key areas: the faith, the fitness, the finances, the family, you know, within the home, but also kind of your circle of influence, right? Your mentorship, your brotherhood, your community, and then ultimately your freedom. Because, you know, every man is, you know, at some point in his life, probably a slave to something outside of himself. For the men that we specifically work with, it's oftentimes pornography or some type of compulsive behavior with porn and masturbation. So yeah, I would say at a 30,000 foot view, I'm about equipping men with the tools that they need to break free from whatever is holding them back so they can step into life that God created them to live.
Mm. Really, really good. Now, our F's are slightly different. You've got your 5 F's. I've got, you know, my 6 F's. We got a couple of different F's. And I don't know if people hit you up with this too. They're like, you left out this one or you left out that one. You know, the list can go. And I think there's a lot of areas for people to kind of lock in, you know, again, on who they are and what they're all about and what's most important. Where I'm curious on this also, Rangan, what intrigued me about this is the focus. I mean, you go, now, where did the focus, I guess, and the experience, or why did you go down into like porn, like their compulsive behaviors and pornography, whether that's personal experience, why you've identified this and why it's so important that this has become, again, your focal point as a coach and your work, quitting pornography, reasons behind it, the compulsive behaviors. I mean, I find this fascinating. I, you know, and a bunch of very personal questions coming at you from me, just wanting to know too.
Yeah. No, 100%. Everything I do today is a byproduct of my own personal journey and story. So, you know, a little bit of background here. You know, I'm 39 today. Today's not my birthday, but I'm 39 at the time of this recording. I got into fitness, business, and entrepreneurship at a very, very young age, though. I mean, I got into bodybuilding in my early 20s. I got into fitness like during high school. Like, it just became a passion. It is like the discipline, work ethic, the ability to kind of transform your physique, like, really empowered me. And I took a lot of that same mindset and same discipline and work ethic and applied it to my career in corporate America. And then by 30, I started my first company, and we, you know, we had some monetary success there. But like most men my age, you know, I'd been introduced to pornography very young, pre-internet. So I always feel it's important to kind of preface that, because when I do talk about the pornography addiction today, like, we see a massive issue in the world. The average age of first exposure is 11 years old. You put a device in a young boy's hand, his brain is not wired and developed to handle the stimulus that he's going to get. So despite succeeding in business, despite succeeding in fitness and having a track record of success and really having a life centered around personal and self-development, I struggled with a pornography addiction for almost 20 years. And when I got on the other side of it in 2019, combined with my faith, you know, finding my faith in 2018, and then really evaluating how I was living out of alignment and really being influenced by some incredible men. So a lot of the transformation in me was just the men that I started to surround myself with. When I got on the other side of a pornography addiction and the world kind of opened itself up to me, and I began to feel massively different. And a lot of the depression and anxiety and just kind of things that were controlling my life, like, when they began to kind of lift off of me, I'm like, there's something behind this. There's something behind this pornography addiction that I had no clue how deep I was wrapped up into it. So I started the podcast, truthfully, Greg, back in 2019, just to share my story and share my experiences, because I had this thought that, like, okay, you've been studying personal development. You've read at this point probably over 500-600 books. You've attended courses. You've attended seminars. You spent so much money on yourself. You've done bodybuilding. You've succeeded there. You were a disciplined man. You could go without drinking. You could go without partying. Why did this porn thing have this grip on you? So I started the podcast just because I wanted to share how my life was changing and transforming. And within 6 months of just having regular conversations, what birthed out of that was all the coaching. So it's not like I set out and said, hey, I want to go help men with pornography. I started to have a conversation about my journey and having other people talk about what they had gone through. And then the inquiries came in. Like, it wasn't something I was like, I'm going to go change the world by helping men overcome pornography addiction. It's like, I started to talk about it, and then the men said, we need you to help us. So I walked away from everything else that I was doing. I left a marketing agency that I was helping build. I shut down my fitness business and said, I'm going to go all in on this thing in 2020. So yeah, all of it started with my own personal transformation first, and what's come out of it has just been transformations in hundreds of men's lives at this point.
Hey guys, Greg here. And I've got to say, I am blown away by the benefits I've received from using the Kineon Move Plus red light therapy device. I got this about 90 days ago, and I have worn it every day since. 5 minutes at a time on each body part, knees, elbows, shoulders. And not only has it improved my mobility and reduced pain, but it's also helped me to recover faster after workouts. Highly recommend the Move Plus to any midlife male out there or anyone in general looking to take their health and wellness to the next level. It's not just for athletes. If you are sedentary, you're sitting at a desk, you have osteoarthritis, you have hip pain, you have knee pain, you have elbow pain, joint pain, try it out. It has been a game changer for me, and I know it can be for you too. All you got to do, go over to Kineon, Kineon.io/midlifemale. Use code midlifemale. You're going to save 10%, and you will not regret it. Check it out. Okay, I got a lot here, and kind of going into this. And the first thing that even pops into my head is porn or masturbation, is it inherently bad? You know, like, we should not do this, and or is there a line between, like, addiction, masturbation with or without porn, like the differentiators, you know? And I approach this in a few ways. My head is kind of spinning on it and trying to be clear and stay with me. Yeah. I say this as a 50-year-old guy who's been married for 22 years, happily, together for 25 with the same woman. As a father of two teenage boys, we talked a little bit about this before. I have a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old. You throw the stat of 11, you know, kind of being almost like first exposure in today's world. You talked about your own kind of introduction to porn. I go back to magazines, summer camp, like Beta, VHS, you know, like all of these other findings, you know, finding a cassette, like all of these other ways that you got introduced to this whole other world, you know. And I'm just kind of going over all my own personal experiences with it there. And I just would love your take as an expert here about inherently bad. Like, where do we even start, you know, to kind of contemplate the relationship with pornography?
Yeah, we got to start by asking a better question, truthfully, Greg. And that's not you know, knock at you. Mm-hmm. But what does it mean to say that porn is inherently bad? Like, I don't like the question. I don't like, maybe it's not the question specifically, but I'm big on language, precision of language, like being very clear in the words that we're using. To say something is that somebody is doing is bad, that's me imposing a moral judgment on that person's mm-hmm. behavior. And that's not what I'm here to do. Is it dangerous? 100%. And here's why I believe that. So pornography, internet streaming pornography, not the magazines that you and I were introduced to, but the internet. So this high stimulating, okay, this infinite amount of basically hardcore material that is accessible for free is dangerous for many, many reasons. We talked about the average age of first exposure is 11 years old. The boy's brain isn't, a male brain isn't fully developed till 27. There's parts of the prefrontal cortex at 11 that aren't even developed. So you start consuming this, what fires together, wires together. So by the time this boy reaches puberty or reaches adulthood, his brain has been wired in condition that the act of sex for him is meant to be watched as a voyeur, as a spectator. That becomes his default way of thinking about sexuality. Now, what also will make this dangerous is by the time most young men today have their first sexual experience, they've had hundreds, if not thousands, of sexual releases. So bad depends on what you mean by the word bad. Dangerous, yes, because it's we're living through an experiment, because the internet in the fashion that we have it here today, and pornography on the internet has really only been here for maybe one generation. We were talking about kind of fashion cycles and stuff like that before we hit record. We have the first generation of young boys becoming men that were raised on watching internet pornography from the time that they were 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. So I think we're seeing a byproduct of that in the world today when you see the stats on the percentages of men under 30, between 18 and 30, 40% of men haven't had a sexual experience. You see everything that's happening online. You have things like MGTOW, you have the black pill, you have all these simps and stuff like this, all this kind of red pill language. I believe a lot of that is a byproduct of these young boys being born into a society of pornography in video games, because video games will give you the rush of pursuing your goals, right? So you get those dopamine hits, like I'm gonna go out there and conquer things, but you're not doing anything in the real world. And then pornography will give you all the same rushes sexually that you would get that without having to leave the world. So bad, I'm not here to say what's good or bad. Dangerous, 100%.
Mm. I love the clarification, and thank you for that, because a part of this, a big part of this is even learning how to have the conversation,
yes. You know,
learning how to even engage in the conversation and even being able to tee it up. Mm-hmm. And then being able to have kind of clarify, make the distinctions between, let's say, dangerous, which makes perfect sense, versus bad or inherently bad. It's in the phrasing. And those mm-hmm. of us without the experience in discussing it, you know, without being out there, again, learning, understanding, working, again, as men, as husbands, as fathers, like, I don't know how to articulate this very well. I don't know what the right, let's say, language is. Now you hear it back, clarification-wise, articulation of dangerous versus bad. Okay, now we can have a different kind of dialogue. You know, mm-hmm. now we can have a different kind of empowering conversation about where does this lead to? And it already, thinking about it much differently as a father, thinking about it much differently in terms of reprogram, you know, where my brain might have been exposed and programmed, wondering what my boys have been exposed to, also, which I should know more. You know, in there, and you've got a lot of these, a lot of these questions. To that effect, I have been.
Well, I think there's a second part to your question that maybe I'd like to touch on is well, because there's a part of me, right? Like, you know, as a believer, as somebody that really stands on his faith being the most important part of his life, like, and also being involved in anti-human trafficking organizations, there's a big part of me that's like, I would like to see internet pornography like eradicated from the world. Like, if I would wake up tomorrow and there just wouldn't be a site where you could go look at it for free, be a win in my book. But I know that's going to be a long uphill battle. I think a lot of people will hear this conversation or hear me talk about these things and say, like, just because a guy watches pornography once, like, he's going to become addicted. And I do not believe that's the case. Just like you can have a sip of alcohol and not be an alcoholic. You can go do recreational drugs and not become a drug addict. I think the addiction comes into play now when maybe a man's brain is more susceptible. Maybe he's wired in a certain way. Like, I do believe that there's a little bit behind the scenes as well that is driving why some of these men become addicted. So I don't believe that just because you watch pornography, you're a porn addict. I would like to see nobody consume it, because we're not even thinking about, like, now the people that are on the screen, like, what was consensual, what wasn't, the stats with trafficking and the link between that and the objectification and the exploitation of a lot of these, of a lot of these women. Like, that's a different conversation that you and I could have about what's going on behind the scenes. But I think if people understood that it's not just watching two people consensually have sex, there's been fraud, coercion that's led up to this. And I've had many, many conversations with people that are more experts in that field on the podcast. But no, I don't believe just because you watch it, you become an addict. I believe certain types of people and certain brain types are more susceptible to falling into an addictive, whether it's a behavioral addiction or a substance addiction.
So let's say also you're somebody who has not thought about it this way, and you raise, like, so many valid points, boom, 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 in there, that hasn't really thought about it, you know, this way. And you talk about arming men with the tools, you know, and the tactics. And what are some of those tools and tactics that you see most, or the issues that guys are coming to you with, or again, about how to rethink this, or maybe learn or think about it and approach it to start maybe down that path of maybe reevaluating either their relationship with porn, you know, whether there is one, and to what degree. I guess where I'm going with this is I struggle again with where do I start, you know, because there's so much here, and we've all had our experience with it, that what are some of those tools and tactics? And I almost feel like as soon as you start talking about them, it's going to lead me down a whole other area, you know, a number of areas that I haven't really given enough thought or paid enough attention to.
Yeah, no, I think it's important, you know, this is an important question, but I think most guys that have a real issue with it are already aware. Like, they know that it's beyond their control. They know that, you know, they're secretly. So here's a great question, like a self-reflection question, right? Like, if you're in a relationship, like if you're married, are you consuming pornography secretly? And if so, why is that the case? Like, why are you doing something that your partner, your wife, or your spouse doesn't know about, or you don't want them to know about? That means the fact that you're holding on to a secret because you're holding on to some type of shame, because if this person found this out about me, they would look at me a certain way. And I don't think shame is a feeling. I believe shame becomes our state of being. And when you're living in shame, nothing in your life can be truly joyful. So if a guy is holding on to a secret, I think there's a sign right there that, hey, there's something going on in your life right now that, like, shouldn't, is out of alignment with either who you want to be, your moral code, however you want to kind of phrase that. So I think most of the guys, by the time they come to me, they're clearly aware that the pornography is a problem in their life. So our work isn't really helping them get clear on the problem. They come to us because they're broken and they can't get out of this themselves. And I think the biggest thing that most of the men that come into our world are struggling with is the belief or confidence that they're actually going to be able to break free from this thing. Because every single guy that is struggling with a pornography addiction, like, and I'm speaking about men that have identified that this addiction has a problem in my life and I need to get out of it. I need to break the chain of what is going on in my life. Every single one of those guys at some point in their life has closed the laptop, has shut the phone off for the last time and said, I'm done. I'm sick and tired of this behavior. I'm ready to get it out of my life. So they voice that commitment to themselves. And then somewhere down the road, a week, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, they're right back in the same place. So they've said one thing and now their actions, their behaviors are not in alignment with what they say. So there creates this element of cognitive dissonance, right? I want to say one thing and I'm acting not in accordance with what I say. You do that enough times, now the belief within yourself, like, can I actually do what I say I'm going to do? So our biggest hurdle with men, at least initially, is just injecting the confidence that, hey, you can actually break free from this thing. Now, how do you go about doing that? Well, you build confidence by keeping the small promises you make to yourself. So you stack small daily wins. What time did you wake up? What does your morning routine look like? What are the first couple of things? Are you stuck in a fitness plan? Are you dedicating yourself to fitness? We use things like fasting and cold plunge and ice baths and these things to lean into some discomfort. So we help the guys build the confidence there. But at the highest views, we're just trying to inject some type of belief in them. But if you have a secret in your life, so if you're struggling with the behavior, you're not talking about it, oftentimes the first thing you need to do once you admit it to yourself that, hey, this thing has control over me, is find somebody in your world that you can have an open, real, honest conversation with. And oftentimes just talking about it with myself or a pastor or a bigger brother or an uncle, mentor type of figure, that first conversation for many, many men begins to lift that chain because you realize, like, the stats of men that are struggling with this, it's not 5% of men, it's not 7%. The stats are shocking. You know, I don't know, because you would have to get a lot of men to participate and admit to things that they probably don't want to. So it's probably somewhere between 30 to 40% of men are really struggling with something that they do not feel they have control over. So you really are a part of a massive population of men. So oftentimes that first conversation, getting it off your chest and realizing, like, hey, this is a problem that a lot of men are struggling with. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you weak in any ways. You just don't have the structure in the community needed to transcend this thing. But yeah, I think most guys are aware if they're really struggling with it.
Mm-hmm. Make sense. This week's episode of the Midlife Male Podcast is brought to you in part by my Midlife Male approved partners at Human Improvement, the easiest to digest protein powder. Vanilla, chocolate, they both taste amazing. But here's why I really use Human Improvement exclusively now, because after trying countless protein powders out there, the vast majority of them leave me feeling full, slow, bloated, gassy, and they don't really align with my nutrition. I eat a considerable amount of meat, a high amount of protein. I'm not keto. I'm not paleo. I'm not gluten-free. I rely on a lot of real foods. So I need a very light, clean, easy to digest protein powder to supplement my nutrition. Human Improvement is the best that I have found. And it does leave me feeling light, satiated, energized. It happens to be delicious. It has 22 grams of organic protein, 5 grams of healthy fiber, which we definitely need, 0 grams of added sugar, which is important to me. And it's a protein powder that actually makes you feel better. And I supplement with protein 1 to 2 times a day, based on my intake, my overall caloric protein intake. And it's necessary to make sure I'm using something that has super high quality ingredients and that actually makes me feel better. Human Improvement boosts my energy and my mood. It supports gut health, leaves me without that bloated, slow, gassy feeling, and helps me to build lean muscle. And at 50, that is hugely important. So I trust Human Improvement. It is my go-to everyday midlife male approved protein powder. You guys should go check it out. I think you're going to like it as well. Go over to Buy High. That's BUYHI.co. BuyHigh.co. Check out Human Improvement. Use promo code MidLifeMail for my special exclusive offer. And hey, reach out. Let me know what you think. I really want to know. And if you come up with some really cool recipes, send them my way. Okay. So I work with a lot. Again, we're on the Midlife Mail podcast. Mm-hmm. The guys that I work with either on a one-on-one basis, kind of in my coaching, the guys that I hear from that are out there, you know, constantly put them in that age bracket of, let's say, call it 30, you know, we're talking 35 to 55. And we were also talking earlier that, look, I know some really old 30-year-olds and I know some really young 60-year-olds. So it's not as much about the number per se, mm-hmm. as it really is about kind of, I think, the way you're operating and the way you're feeling and the way you're acting in life, you know, there. But in a lot of cases, the majority of the cases, the guys that I'm talking to and I'm working with, they have been married for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Their kids are getting a little bit older. They might even be on their second marriage, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. Some are divorced, back in the dating world, you know, out there. And I get into one of the things I hear, and maybe we'll kind of put this in order because I'd love your take on it, okay, is a lot of the men are frustrated. They're frustrated sexually, mm-hmm, because their sex drive is higher than that of their partners. Mm-hmm. And based on, and so they don't feel, this is on a, that they're getting, you know, they're not as sexually satisfied or as frequently, you know, if you will. We can get into the quality versus quantity conversation, but you know, they're looking for more, you know, and their middle-aged wives, sex drives are not as high as a lot of these guys are. We can get into, you know, they don't want to cheat. Okay. They don't want to break up the family. In some cases, they don't want to be divorced. So whether it's either porn or masturbation, and I don't know whether you consider them the same, you know, in a way, or like, is it, again, like, is there, I guess I'm just struggling with the words. Is there a utilization for release to be like, okay, if I'm satisfied to a certain degree without pressuring my wife or doing all this is positive for our marriage, for staying together. We just are not as aligned in terms of sexual relations or frequency after this period of time. Is that making sense at all?
Yeah, man. And God, there's like, I want to go like six different angles with this. I think a lot of those excuses are just BS though. Like truthfully, like I think it's a man passing off responsibility for himself and playing a victim. I need this because a certain person outside of me isn't doing what I want to do. Mm. Break that down. And all you're doing is you're playing a victim. That's all that you're doing is you're playing a victim. What are you doing to not have your wife attracted to you? What are you doing to not show up as a man that your wife wants to sexually satisfy and please? I would say that there's probably issues going on, and I'm not a marriage counselor or marriage specialist. We've had a handful of them on the podcast. I would say that there's probably deeper issues going on to the relationship and not solving those, not getting to the root of why you're not aligned sexually, of why you're not aligned intimately with your spouse or with your wife, would actually be the path to solving the problem. Not saying, hey, we're not aligned in these things in our relationship, so I'm just gonna put this in a box and compartmentalize it, sit that over here, and then go run and please and pleasure my own self, never addressing the root of the problem. It's like with pornography addiction. It's never a problem with pornography. The addiction is not with, it is with pornography, but the problem is not with pornography. The problem is with your inability to handle stressful situations. So you seek pornography as an outlet to escape the reality of the own life that you've created for yourself. So if you're running from a broken marriage, if you're running from a sexless marriage, if you're running from a marriage that lacks intimacy to go use pornography as an outlet to pleasure yourself, you're not solving the root problem. The marriage is still going to be broken. Once you're done playing with yourself, you're going to return back to a broken marriage. So I would say solve that first, and then I think the rest will take care of itself. So no, but to answer, I think there was a second question with pornography and masturbation. If you can masturbate without the use of pornography, all for you. Our work is centered around internet streaming pornography addiction. I know that there's a need for a man to release, right? Like, you know, and as a Christian, as a believer, that is done in the act of sex between a man and a man and a wife, right? Husband and wife. I'm not the expert here, you know, biblically, as far as like masturbating to your wife or anything like that. Like, I'm all for guys in our program. Like, if your wife has sent you photos, like all for that, use that, or use your own kind of physical imagination of your wife, not other women that you've thought about or other women you've seen on the screen, because now it's like, well, you don't love your wife enough to honor her. You're going to go use other women. You're going to objectify other women. But the core problem here, and what I heard you say, is like, that's nothing more than men playing a victim in their own life and not saying, okay, what have I done to create these problems that I'm seeing as problems in my life? And how can I take the responsibility to fix them?
Mm. It's so good, and a lot there to, I get, also really think about and really, really consider. Because I think, again, there are so many areas here that don't get talked about enough. When you're back to, you know, having somebody to talk about this with, having somebody to share this with, listening to the different experiences, the different viewpoints, even when I put something out there right now, I don't know, Frank, what's coming back at me. Like what you're going to see, you know, like I just don't have the breadth of knowledge, the experience, you know, in talking about this. And I don't know what I don't know. And here it is. It comes back. Go, okay, that's valid. Maybe I agree with some of that. Maybe I don't agree with all that. That's valid. Okay. You can start to see all sides and go, how do I aggregate everything that he's talking about, kind of curate it down to maybe what I think, what I believe, how does this affect my own life? What am I eliminating from there? And then how, again, do I go back to, I'm going to circle back to some of the things you said earlier, which I love, where not breaking the promises that I make to myself, you know? Not breaking the promises that I make to my wife,
you
know? Not breaking the promises that I make to my boys, you know, or living in a certain manner, living and leading, you know, by example. So, and I love it. I say this a lot too, and I love this, that stacking of little, you know, that stacking of wins. I kind of want to get into, you know, what your days look like, what the days of even the men you work with look like, maybe even before and after.
Yeah. I want to touch that, but I want to circle back to the conversation around marriage, because I just want to make it clear, like, these are not just ideas and theories. I've had enough conversations with the wives of our program when they reach out to me and say, Frank, thank you for giving me my husband back. Like, the man that I fell in love with ago 10 years, I've seen him for the first time after going through your program. So trust me, men, if you're hearing this and you're struggling with a compulsive and addictive behavior with pornography, that energy is being projected out of you into your wife. And whether she's articulating or not, it is playing a role in how she sees you. The masculine energy, the frame of masculinity that you're bringing into the home is shattered, because there's nothing inherently masculine about being a man that sits behind a computer screen, pants down, pleasuring himself to pixels on a screen. There's nothing masculine about that. How you do one thing is how you do everything. So you are not providing a masculine frame for what to be a part of. So I've heard from so many wives that were sexless before said, Frank, thank you, because I'm attracted to my husband again. So that's just not an idea. There's actual support behind that.
Can I ask one follow-up to that? And I'm glad you went there. I would curious also to know the number of women that are presented that approach you first on behalf of their husbands, meaning like they know something's going on. Okay. Yeah. Versus also the women that come back to you afterwards and say, thank you, you know, for helping and working with my husband. I'm just curious on the ratio. I get 40% of my inquiries from women. And it surprises a lot of people in terms of, because the husbands are like, I want forgiveness and permission to engage in coaching or do this. And they're afraid. And the wives are like, the support is already there. The wives are like, I want you to be the best version of yourself. I want you to be the man I married. And we've lost a lot of that. So I'm just curious how it is on your end.
Man, I wish my experience was similar to yours. I do hear from women, but oftentimes it's women that are secretly reaching out to me. Hey, I know he's doing this. Hey, I've caught him. Hey, I've gone through his search history. Hey, he's not, he won't admit that this is a problem. Those are the things that I hear oftentimes from women. And it's, and it's, and it hurts me because I don't have a great thing to go tell them. Like, I don't have, like, there's not a say these three magic words and it's going to like, it's going to open up this awareness within your husband. Like, he's got to recognize this in himself first and he's got to admit it to himself. So we do have women. And actually I did an episode with, a woman that goes by the Porn Addict's Wife, Jolene Nguyen. Her entire business is centered around helping wives of porn addicts heal themselves, whether or not the husband is doing anything about it. So she's built a practice and she's built a business off of helping women get the healing that they need, even if their husband isn't willing to address it. So for those women that reach out to me, I'm like, you got to connect with Jolene because I don't understand the dynamics of what you're going through. I can only help a man that raises his hand and said, hey, I admit that I need help. And those are not the women that are reaching out to me or are not the ones that their husbands have admitted. Because once they've admitted it to the wife, it's like they're the ones that are reaching out to me. So I wish I had a similar experience to yours, but ours hasn't been the same.
Understood. Again, that also makes sense. Didn't mean to get in the way. I just wanted to ask that follow-up because I love where you took it. But what we were talking about when it was getting into, again, some of those tools and tactics and those stacking of those little wins to start rebuilding confidence. And maybe, I don't know if you call it replacing or starting to kind of either like stop, replace, or decrease the frequency, you know, over time until it gets down to ideally zero. You know, like which, how you approach all this?
Yeah. Well, the morning. I think the question was around the morning, the stacking of the wins in the morning. Mm-hmm. The first thing for me is I haven't hit snooze in like 5 years. I got to a point for a while I was sleeping without an alarm clock. I just got up whenever I naturally woke up. Schedules have kind of gotten a little bit busier where my mornings are really stacked. So I have to be up at a given time. What works for me is having an alarm clock like that goes off outside of the room. So I'm literally forced upon like hearing the alarm to get out of bed, walk out of my room to shut the alarm clock off. Cause it's very easy to just roll over and hit snooze without even really thinking. It almost happens like unconsciously. We're so conditioned. So I think the biggest win for my day and the biggest win that we try to instill in our men is like, you keep that first promise. That first promise of the day is the time that you said you were going to wake up. Now for me, the next thing after shutting the alarm off is I make the bed. Like it just, I remember the talk from the Admiral that's it's on YouTube, 17, 20 million.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, the Navy about making your bed. I've got
yeah. You know. Want to change the world. You make your bed like that. That really spoke to me for many reasons. Number one, it's a second promise. So I kept the promise of not hitting snooze. So I'm up now. And I kept the promise of getting a small task accomplishment done. So the bed is made, task completed, and it also creates an environment for me when I return to the bedroom at the end of the day. Like now I have a nice bed to walk into. And I know there's a lot of people like, oh, you're just gonna sleep in anyways. For me, that's what works. So don't snooze, alarm clock outside of the bedroom, make your bed. And then it's prayer, gratitude, journaling for the day, kind of the prepping and planning of the day. And this is really what is in our curriculum as well. So we have a gratitude practice in our curriculum. We have a meditation in our curriculum. We have prayer and scripture study inside of our curriculum. So I still live the morning routine that we give to the guys inside of our program. So up early, make the bed, prayer, gratitude, meditation, some type of journaling. And then for me, it's getting right into the workday. So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, work from home. I like to have about a 6 to 9 minute deep work session, like in the morning. For me, the creativity kind of sparks first thing in the morning. So whether it's, you know, writing books, doing marketing campaigns, whatever it is, like the creative part of my day really thrives between the hour of 6 a.m. and 7:30. So I'm up between 5 and 5:15. By the time I got the routine done, I'm usually at my desk around 6 and I do about a 90 minute deep work session. And then I take an hour break. And that hour break for me is walking the dog. I like to get outside. I like to catch some sunrise first thing in the morning as well. So we try to catch the sun come up. And then I have a sauna at home as well. So I do a 30-minute sauna every single morning. And then usually by 9-ish, I'm back at the desk for another big kind of deep session of work for 2.5-3 hours. Then I hit the gym. So that's my kind of personal morning routine.
Hey guys, I want to talk about Bubs Natural, specifically their grass-fed, pasture-raised collagen peptides. This is your daily support for joints, hair, skin, and nails. I love this. Mainly why I love it is it really makes my Bubs Naturals coffee taste great, smooth, kind of creamy, because it dissolves fast. And that's the thing about some of these collagen peptides out there. I've tried a lot of them, and they get kind of clumpy. They don't really blend in and dissolve well into your coffee. Bubs is perfect. Smooth. The collagen peptides are flavorless. It dissolves perfectly into my coffee. It is gluten-free. It is soy-free. It is nut-free. It is GMO-free, and it is corn-free. You're going to love this, okay? It is the purest protein you can find on the planet. These guys are doing an amazing job at Bubs. It's Whole Foods approved. It's NSF certified. Check it out. Just go to bubsnaturals.com. You can use promo code MIDLIFEMALE. You're going to save 20% off. Pick up all their products while you're over there. The MCT oil powder, the collagen protein powder. Pick up a few bags of coffee. Trust me on this one. You're going to love Bubs Naturals. How long? I think a bunch of guys also, or men, they get fixated on like, okay, that's your routine, or that's this guy's routine. I have to have that kind of a routine or do that. And what sometimes gets lost is like how long it took you or how many iterations to go through to figure out again what really has worked for you. You know, the bandwidth, like what am I capable of doing? Can I do 2 hours of good, you know, work in a row before I need to get up and go for that walk? And there's so many similarities between the stuff that you're describing, you know, and even like the way I live and like other guys live, like in a lot of ways, all the elements are there. It's like, what order are we putting them in? Mm-hmm. How much time you might be able to knock out two and a half hours worth of work. You know, I go an hour and a half, need to get up, you know, a certain amount of space.
Yeah.
You might get up, you know, you might do your workout a little bit later in the day. I do mine a little bit earlier, but it can't be first. You know, I guess how many, you know, iterations, you know, and I guess setting guys up for success here, it's like, you got to try some things before you also figure out what works. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the last 3 weeks of our program is us giving you the keys to now develop your own routine. So for me personally, the routine changes seasonally, you know, depending on what is the highest priority within my life. You know, there were points, you know, as a bodybuilder, and there, I'm sure there'll be points like this later on in my life where fitness may be one of the top priorities. So maybe an early morning workout, maybe an early morning, like an extra cardio session first thing in the morning, maybe makes sense. Right now that doesn't. Right now, 2023 is scale. Like that's what we're focused on doing, scaling the podcast and scaling the company. So the work for me has to come first. But I tell all the guys in our program, like we give you a routine for the first 3 months of the program. Like this is what you must do to succeed in the recovery side of things. But by the end of the program, we want to empower them to know how to figure this out for yourself, because I think it's based on your life, like your own circadian rhythm. Like I think a lot of people hear a 4, 5 a.m. wake up time. They see Jocko Willink crushing a workout, or they see somebody like myself, 5 a.m. Like I got to be a 5 a.m. I got to be a 5 a.m. I got to be a 5 a.m.er. And it's like, they're a different chronotype. Like they thrive later on in the evening. I've had friends that have built massive companies working from midnight to 6 a.m., like, which is odd in the entrepreneurship space, but that's what worked for them. So I think understanding yourself, where most people don't, there's zero self-awareness with 90% of the population. So if you know yourself, if you know your priorities, where priorities follow a vision for your life. So what's the vision for your life? What is it you're trying to accomplish? So you know where it is you want to go in 2023, then you could build the plan, you could build the daily routine to help accomplish what it is you're trying to do. So I think routines change. I mean, it literally changed here in January 2023 for me, because like I said, we're focused on scale. So we stacked the morning with more work, where I pushed my workout later on in the day, where before it would be earlier 9, 10 a.m. where I wanted to make sure I got it in. Now I want to make sure I get enough, like a couple extra hours of work in, and then I go hit the gym. And then usually the afternoon is like calls and podcasts. But no, I think it's understanding yourself. And then Are you working towards a bigger vision? And that's another part we help the guys is actually painting a vision for their life and who they want to become.
Mm. So prioritization, you know, obviously stands out. And I think that's such a key way, a key thing and such a key way of looking at it, that at different ages and stages of your life with different goals, you're going to have different priorities and where they sit, you know, in there. And then the other one, which is, again, back to your non-negotiables. You know, it sounds like, look, you have non-negotiables. They are in, you know, how you do one thing is how you do everything, that are in your makeup, that are in you do. The question goes back to, again, where do those non-negotiables align with your priorities?
Yes.
Which makes so much sense. Like, hey, my fitness is still super important to me. It's a non-negotiable, but I am not competitively bodybuilding right now. A lot of white space between that and the way that you train, you know, for general physical preparedness or being in great shape versus I'm going to be on stage in 18 weeks, 24 weeks or whatever, you know, that looks like, you know, scaling a business, same thing. Where does that rank? What does scale look like to you? I'm curious, like, you know, how do you see kind of business growth? I always ask a lot of guys, it's what's enough? You know, what does success look like to you?
Yeah, man. God, this is a question that, I mean, over the years would be so differently answered. You know, I don't think about building, you know, the biggest company in the world. I have friends that are driven like that, right? Like I have a friend, like I truly believe he's 31, 32 now, already running multi eight figures a year. Dude's going to be a billionaire. It's all he talks about. Like, I will be a billionaire. And I was like, yeah, it's probably going to happen for you because you're just wired that way. For me, I've tried to create a life that I don't have to do things that I don't want to do. You know, so intentionality like is very key for me. So learning to delegate, learning to get things off my plate that maybe don't fall into a 5 or 10% superpower for myself. So creative, sales, marketing, coaching, boom. That's where I thrive. Tech, numbers, data, accounting, finance. Nope, not my superpower. Build the people around me to do it. You know, in terms of long-term success with what we're building, I would like to have a top 10 podcast in the world, you know, on the podcast side of things, not for any other metric other than I know that if we make it in the top 10, like we just have a massive reach and we're impacting a lot of people. On the recovery side of things, I want to have the number one porn addiction program in the world. And I'd like to build a company like, you know, which is why, you know, I talk a lot about rebuilt recovery. Like, it's not Frank Rich's porn addiction recovery. It's like, I want to have a company, a brand that kind of lives outside of me being the face. Like, I want to actually have a brand that is maybe one day somebody will look at it and be like, okay, we could acquire that. I think timing is playing a massive role. Like, you know, you've said it a few times here. Like, this is not a conversation that is regularly had. And in 3.5 years of me having it, it's begun to get a lot more accepted. So as a business person that sees opportunity, I believe timing is very good for me to actually do what it is I want to do, because I think that we're just now in the early stages of this being like the real conversation and people actually understanding like how dangerous this thing really, really is. But yeah, scale for me at this year is building a team out. That's going to be doing a lot of the coaching for me, so I can really operate at the highest level of the marketing, the visionary, so forth and so forth.
I love all that. You know, I think that where you also are touching on some stuff that really hits home with me is in the intentionality, you know, and in the understanding of, you know, personal strengths and weaknesses and even interests. You know, you were able to clearly identify and articulate, okay, here are my strengths, the things that I like to do that really, and then here are the list of, I'm not even going to call them weaknesses. They may just not be the areas that you really want to go, you know, and spend a whole lot of time. Not that the capability isn't there, not that you couldn't learn it, but also having that strength to delegate, you know, and or empower. And I think a lot of times we get caught up in this, you know, that we have to strengthen every one of our weaknesses, you know, that we have to get so uncomfortable, you know, getting uncomfortable, you know, in this area, versus also in terms of scale, like sometimes the better move might be, let me just double down and keep strengthening my strengths, getting stronger and stronger and stronger. These weaknesses, by the way, don't really need to be strengthened. They're not affecting me all that much. Yeah, I don't need to be great at accounting. I need to hire a great accountant. Is what I need to do.
Yeah.
And making those types of asset personal assessments, you know, out there, and then acting on that. I also think you're spot on and right that, look, a lot of these stigmas, stereotypes, assumptions, you know, judgments, taboos, these topics, and you're right smack in the middle of it with what you're doing with Rebuild, are become like, bring them front and center. You know, it's becoming, okay, more, I guess, acceptable, if you will, or at least like to have these conversations, to bring them a little bit more front and center, to be a little bit more vulnerable as men, or be a little bit more open to discuss or seek out help and be okay in every one of these areas, and maybe not draw so many dividing and divisive lines between, or differentiations between different types of addiction, even if you will, with different types of taboo. Like, there are similarities in all of them.
100%. Yeah. I mean, human nature is human nature. And that's why I'm glad you asked the question early on about like being bad. And we were able to really kind of hone in on that, because I think that's what's happening. At least, you know, you see it in, you know, mainstream media still really hasn't caught on. I mean, there's been a handful of, you know, conservative news shows that have really begun to address it. You know, obviously they get pushed back because it's like, oh, here's this right-wing extremist or whatever. But in terms of like our space, you know, this kind of like social media, this kind of secondary media stuff, you've had the conversation on Rogan now multiple times. He had Dr. Anna Lemke. I had Dr. Anna Lemke on the show as well. She's Stanford's head of addiction, author of Dopamine Nation. That episode with Joe got 10 million downloads. That's 10 million people that heard, you know, one of the world's leading researchers on pornography addiction. You know, shows like Lewis Howes are now beginning to address the darkness of human trafficking. You have a great organization out there with OUR, Operation Underground Railroad. So yeah, I think just the acceptance of people understanding that it's not a good and bad conversation anymore. It's like, this thing is real. Like, there's real addictive tendencies behind the stimulus of pornography, how it kind of shapes and hijacks parts of our brains. So yeah, we definitely are seeing it much more accepted. And for me, that's a good thing.
Are you specifically also, I want to ask, what are the, like, at what age do you start working with men? I mean, we touched earlier that, again, exposure is now at 11.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, do you, like, is there an age range, like, I mean, for your services and your programs also, like, or are you seeing kids or are dads or moms bringing you like younger kids who, again, whose frontal cortex and lobes are not fully developed, that have gotten into this early, you know, or is there a range for you?
A handful of parents that have reached out about like inquiring about their son being a part of our program. Like, I empower the parents. Like, they don't need me yet. Like do your job as a parent and get this under control. I had a lot of young boys that do reach out that are scared to go talk to their parents. So that's what I direct like teenagers to do. Like, if they hit me up on the DMs or something, I was like, have a conversation with the parents. And then if they have questions, have them reach out to me. We have had guys in our program as young as 18. I had a high school senior last year, worked 2 part-time jobs to get the money to afford the coaching. It's not cheap, you know, like, we're not expensive, but it's a couple $1,000 to work with us for a 4-month period. So the vast majority of our demographic is probably 27 to 40. You know, I think that's, you know, by the time you hit mid to late 20s and this thing has control over you and like, you're not making any progress, like, you're still playing video games, you're still living in your parents' house, it's like, now you begin to wake up. So the younger, like, it's usually mid to late 20s, but we've had guys as in their 60s come through our program. But the bulk of it is kind of that 27 to mid 40s is where they really fall.
Mm. Frank, this is awesome. And there, I mean, in turn, look, there's, it's a topic that, to be honest, and thank you for coming, it's a topic that I have not covered before. It's a topic that, you know, that I think is so important. I was excited to speak to you about it and to learn more. And, you know, I just think it's so important. I think the work that you're doing is really so good and so needed right now. And this has just opened my eyes to so many different, even just questions and ways of looking at it and thinking it through again as a husband and a father and as a man. So I just appreciate the opportunity to learn and talk to you about this. Where do people find you for more information? Because I think, again, like, we just scratched the surface in like an hour basically on this. And this is what you do, you know, day in and day out, year after year. Where do people learn more about you, Rebuilt Recovery, Superhuman Life podcast, you know, all the amazing stuff that you're doing to bring this to the forefront and make a difference?
Yeah. Awesome, Greg. And no, man, I'm grateful for you. And I appreciate, you know, you open up your platform and audience today to have this conversation. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, our mission and goal is to not help a lot of men or, you know, help 1,000. It's like, I want to see the world eradicated of pornography. Like that's what I'm here. Like, and my flag is deep in the ground. So we're not stopping anytime soon. And that's only going to be accomplished by me partnering with men like yourself, right, that have an audience that I can't reach yet. So I'm grateful for you for having me on here today and willing to address, you know, at least this 30,000 foot view of this. If anybody wants to go deeper, so the podcast, you know, The Superhuman Life, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, any platform, wherever you consume your podcast, we're there. In terms of me, the best place to find me is on Instagram. That's at Coach Frank Rich. Our YouTube channel just hit 10,000 subscribers this past week. So we're taking a 30 or 28 day hiatus from YouTube to kind of come back, re-strategize. We'll be relaunching that March 1. But you can find us on YouTube. There's over 700 videos just on tips, tactics, strategies, mindsets, whatever you need. So every day since July 28th of 2020 up until today, we've done a video. Like, we're literally shutting it down just for the month of February to kind of re-strategize on some things. But yeah, find us on YouTube, Coach Frank Rich, Instagram, Coach Frank Rich, the podcast, Superhuman Life, anywhere you go. And anything about Rebuilt Recovery can be found at rebuiltrecovery.com.
Awesome stuff. Guys, check all of this out. I know you're sitting there, you're listening, you are thinking, there's more that you want to learn, there's more that you want to know to go there. So check out Frank Rich in all of the areas that he mentioned. Coach Frank Rich, get there, okay? Bookmark, set a suspense for yourself for when that YouTube channel goes back live again, okay? Better, stronger, more powerful, deeper with all the content that he's working on. This has been awesome. Rebuilt Recovery. If you like, guys, again, what you've heard on the podcast, do me that favor. Also, give us the 5-star rating. Leave us that positive review. Share the episode with your friends. Keep both the midlife male movement growing. Keep the Rebuilt Recovery movement growing and what Coach Frank is working on. And we will be back again next week. Thank you so much. Take care. If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midwifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.